$5. New from SNK. Play on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Are you up to the challenge?
This week in your parents' basement, we're using our wind sword to break the walls down as we play Crystallius by SNK for the NES, or as they say in the UK, the NES. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me as the master of the warp boots is Todd Brisket.
Hey man, you ever play Legend of Zelda on Wii?
It's an apt description, as I'm sure we'll get into. And our other regular co-host, he survived 100 years of cryosleep to kick some ass. It's Yule Hauser.
It has been said that an ending is merely a beginning in disguise.
Oh, very wise. Today we're joined by a dear, dear friend of the show. He used telepathy to tell us he wanted to join us tonight. It's Dale.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. Not too long after the 20th anniversary of the end day.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that the conclusion of last week's show after the mics had gone quiet. So you can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. You can also join our Discord channel by going to yppodcast.com/Discord, where you can chat with all the sweet baby boys. And as always, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link. You can find it right on the YPP homepage, yppodcast.com. This week's game is Crystallius. Released in 1990, Crystallius is like Zelda, but with more nuclear Armageddon. You play as a scientist who awakens 100 years in the future. It's kind of like Fallout of the Past. For some reason, you're proficient in swords, and you're trying to stop a fortress in the sky. I played through this one as a youth and really enjoyed it, although it did require a lot of Nintendo Power hints to beat. Dale, you're our guest this week. What's your thoughts and experience with this one?
Yeah, you're not wrong about, I remember when I first brought this game up to you about it, and you just mentioned on how needing the Nintendo Power hints, and I just told myself, this is a game I always wanted to play but missed out on for being one of the pioneers for action RPGs on consoles. So, I'm like, All right, let's see how far I can make it without using a walkthrough. And that only lasted about, like, not even 10 minutes. Oh my god, this I had a blast playing this, but like, yeah, you need to the game makes you do some pretty obscure things to make progress in here, and
it's not as bad as a Castlevania 2.
No,
it's pretty bad.
I mean, I had the feeling while I was playing it, like while I was making my way through the overworld and all that, like, okay, I think like if this was 8-10-year-old me, enough trial and error would make, I would gradually make my way through this and know what to do. But the amount of, I guess being the old NES style controller, since there's a lot of, you had a little menu toggling to do back and forth. So I wasn't kind of anticipating all the switching to do to the, switch the swords to combat all the various types of enemies. I'm like, oh, here's the gumdrop looking enemies, got to switch to the blue sword. Here's the radish looking enemies, got to switch to the wind sword, and so forth. And there are some cases too where you got to use certain items to progress that threw me for a loop too. But yeah, like you said, Steve, this is one I highly recommend using a walkthrough too. But that said, I still had a ton of fun with this. I mean, at first I was thinking this is kind of a little bit like a Zelda adventure action, but the more and more I played, I'm like, no, this is more like almost the modern day action RPG. Walk around your overworld. You got various towns and settlements to go to, just like an RPG. And you got your HP life bar. You got magic spells you can use to attack. And I don't know if I'm, was there any other like true action RPGs on the NES around this time, you think? Because I couldn't think of any off the top of my head unless you consider Zelda.
This game is definitely like Zelda inspired. Like clearly,
this is the most Zelda game we played besides Zelda.
Okay, it's weird though. I've always
Zelda-iest.
Like this weird distinction between Legend of Zelda being action adventure, and then Crystalis being like an action RPG. I don't know. There's just something about it, like the puzzle solving and the dungeons in Zelda just have this. One are so in depth that I always kind of consider it its own type of game. I don't know.
Well, this I would say Crystalis does have it has more RPG elements to it.
Yeah,
it also plays. I think it's a little more difficult because it definitely plays quicker than Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Like the combat. And it's Zelda.
It's clunkier. Yeah, the only series I see compared to Crystalis. Is the E's or the Y's series, as people say in the UK. That series of games for the NES is an action RPG game. That's about as close as you get on the the old NES.
What game is that?
It's said E's, but it's spelled Y apostrophe S.
Huh.
Yeah. I think those games are more popular in Japan, and I don't think they ever really caught on that much over in the States. Like I remember Nintendo Power would always push those games, and I never actually saw them in a store or like in a rental place, so I didn't know anyone who actually played them. Whereas Crystalis, or Crystalis, however you say it,
Crystalis, like
that one I saw in stores, and I actually owned it as a kid, so
yeah, I missed out. I never saw this one at the rental place, and I never appeared on my radar. This would be my jam. It'd be right up my alley as a kid, but I just never played it before this week.
Yeah, heard of it. I hadn't heard of it till Dale suggested it.
Yeah, this is one I've always been wanting to play on the Nintendo for a while. Like I've heard it referenced every now and again over the years, but never. Unlike if you see your average top 10, top 20, top 30 list, it's rarely been on like the top 10, 20, 30 NES games, but it's always been kind of one of the more hidden gems on the NES. And there's been this one website where this Crystalis is kind of like the unofficial game of this website. I don't know if you guys ever heard of GameCool. It's kind of, it's not like a super big website.
Oh,
GameCool?
GameCola.net.
Oh, GameCola.
But like I don't, they did this weird 10-part podcast series where they play out the game's plot in a tabletop RPG, kind of like a D&D, and
wow,
and they did it in such an odd, unique way where I just told myself I don't care how good or bad this game is, I have to play it now. I could throw you a link to it. I don't know if it's something that you guys or other listeners would be interested in checking out, but it just inspired me. I'm like, all right, I got to play this game. I got to see what the heck this is like.
Yeah, for being a Nintendo, a NES, a NES, as they say in the UK, game, this is very, very deep and story-driven. It's got a nice backstory going on for it. There's a lot to process.
How did you guys appreciate its level of English throughout?
the English is strong in this one, which makes it hard to follow kind of what's going on with the plot, and also to know what you have to do and where you have to go.
Dale mentioned getting about 10 minutes in, and that's about when I had to start looking up a guide.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get the wind sword first. Well, first of all, we haven't even dove into this game really, there's Dragon, there's a bad guy that you got to beat. That's pretty much
Dragon.
So there's these four elemental swords that combine to become the Crystalis sword, which is the mightiest sword ever created.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic
idea.
Say
in Japan, Crystalis.
Yes, which is the Japanese pronunciation that Steve was trying to use. But you get the wind sword first, and your first mission, I guess you could call it mission, is to get the windmill working. So naturally, I thought, oh, I'll just use the wind sword on the windmill and that'll start spinning around, right? Mm-hmm. No, that's not it at all. You have to wake up the guard that has the key for the windmill. How do you wake him up? You have to go buy a flute.
Yes.
To wake him up and get a key. There's no way I would have figured that out. It's like, mm-hmm. what? You have to go back to the town you started in and buy
this
a flute.
This is far in the future where people are very deep sleepers.
Yeah.
And they can only be awakened by a flute.
Well, it's far into the future
the point
where...
And the flute is about halfway through the game.
No, you have to go buy it.
Oh, wait, no, I'm thinking there's another part. Like,
this is super
later,
early.
Later on.
Yeah.
You got to wake him up again beginning. Later on, halfway through the game.
Oh, with what a jerk. Flute. What's with this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, the guy even mentions, by the way, buy two flutes and save yourself some trouble.
Shoot. Ah, yeah, I missed a part in the guide then. Don't!
Buy two flutes.
Yeah.
But,
oh, gosh.
This is far into the future where technology has destroyed society. So they put all the technology into a floating tower and then just started over with like basic fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess at some point you were frozen in a cryogenic chamber and kind of forgotten about. So when everyone put their technology up in the sky, you were left in a cave somewhere. And then you wake up in this weird fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens. It happens to the best of us.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is like the classic Boy of Destiny game where you're just a regular kid, but now you have magic powers and you have to go save the world.
Well, in his time, he was just a regular kid. But then in the future, everybody's all weak and decrepit and mutated.
Yeah.
Now he is super strong. Compared to everybody else.
He's the only one who knows how to use like a smartphone, so he's like the smartest person on earth when he comes into this future past.
I thought the background of this game was that he was like a scientist and he was cryogenically frozen.
I've read multiple things on different sites.
I'm just going off the manual. Guides.
And there's one that calls him a musician that knows how to do magic. There's one that calls him a magician. Then there's one that calls him a scientist.
Well, hold on. I'm trying to read this at the same time. Yeah, magician.
Yeah, it was
a young magician.
It was a heavy plot intro setting up.
There's like three manual pages of a story here. So Dragon's this main bad guy, and he
Dragon
sees the weapons, which were the four magic swords. But they had made them too well, and he was unable to destroy them. Knowing they could only defeat him if used together, Dragon scattered the weapons throughout the land and stripped the wise magicians of most of their powers. In desperation,
killed them.
Yeah, I know. In desperation, they began to study the writings from the time of the Great War, whatever that is, where they learned of a great magician, the most powerful who had ever lived. He had been imprisoned in a cave and frozen by the evil forces of the Great War. Who had hoped to use his powers to control the world after the war. Searching the globe, the wise men found the cave and were amazed to find the mighty magician frozen within was a mere lad. Though they knew it might destroy them, they pulled all their remaining powers in an attempt to will him back to life. When the boy awoke, his mind a blank, even for his name. They had vanished, leaving him to find his destiny in this strange new world. So yeah, you were an old, powerful magician who has amnesia or something and is now in this new world.
But see, that directly conflicts with like the first scene of the actual game where like you come out of the cave and there's just some yahoo who's like, oh my god, someone's coming out of the cave.
What's this cave all about?
But the cave is like supposed to be like long, hidden away, not really just outside a block away from town.
Yeah. Like mere feet from this town. But, yeah, I mean, the magicians that awoke you disappeared, so I guess they're just not there anymore.
It was weird. It was weird. Hearing you just kind of go through the intro again like that, I guess all of a sudden, and like the way how the hero awakens in the cave, and, you know, you got to find these, you know, the four crystalline swords, and it's reminded me a lot of I can see a lot of correlations with the intro to Breath of the Wild, almost.
Mm. Oh, that's almost the exact scene. In the beginning. Yeah.
Zelda finally steals from Crystallis.
Yes. Crystallis.
Crystallis. So, yeah, the story's kind of all over for this one. I don't know. As you go along, it's got more of the standard stuff where you're fighting, you know, you're fighting mini bosses in your way and that kind of thing. But yeah, this game really just throws you into areas and gives you no clue about how to do things. There's no in-game map, which is a bit of an issue at times.
That is a big downside.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, like I've beaten this game, I think when I was a kid, I beat it 2 or 3 times.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, well, between the manual and Nintendo Power, like, you can get through most of, like, the tricky puzzles, but there's just, like, a whole bunch of, like, little crap that can just thwart your progress. Like having to, like, certain events in the game, like, you have to go talk to the sleeping guard, I think, before you can buy the alarm thing, or, like, there's just weird stuff like that throughout the game.
Yeah, there was one part where you talk to the queen of this one town, and there's a certain order where you have to talk to the queen, and she kind of gives you a dialogue where it feels like you already talked through all your options with her, and she's just giving you her regular, go away dialogue, you know, go figure out what to do in the game. But instead, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to go into this nearby cave, and there really isn't anything into the cave. You just eventually you see, I think it's like some stop point in the cave, but you're not really, the game doesn't really indicates that. And then you go back to the princess's room, and then she gives you some proceeding dialogue on how to venture forth or something, or it makes it so you can then finally use an item you couldn't use before. It's odd. And while reading the guide, I was like, oh man, I can't believe that's the order of progress. That probably would have taken me quite a while to figure out.
Yes. And then at other times, it's unclear if you can't. You can only hurt some enemies in this game if you're at a certain level. And to gain levels in this game, you have to grind, like, to gain experience and gold. Like, you won't get it just venturing normally through this game. So at various points, it's unclear if you can't harm enemies because you don't have the proper sword or because you're at too low of a level. So that becomes an issue at points too, along with, as Dale mentioned, like sometimes you have to switch between 4 different swords to find the one goddamn sword that will actually hurt something. So that's not so much fun either.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of trial and error there. I mean, eventually I got the hang of it and I got used to it, and, I could see how in 1990 or early 90s, how this could have been fine by the standards of the time. But, you know, it definitely took me at least a few hours to get used to it in this setting and get my old gameplay, the way I feel about it, back to last century mode. And I'm like, okay, I'm feeling this game.
Mm-hmm.
I did like how, like, the items and or your swords would level up when you add items to it, and your spells would level up in abilities, like making the ice bridges to go across the rivers and using the wind attack to break through walls. I thought that kind of added a nice little some minor degrees of depth to getting through the dungeons and traverse across the overworld. So I was digging that.
Yeah, that's one of the more fun parts of the game, when you get I think there's rings and then bracelets that power up your attacks from level 1 to level 2 to level 3. So you can charge them up like the old Secret of Mana.
Yeah.
Except this game came out way before Secret of Mana. So
I just like any game where I can wear jewelry.
I guess Secret of Mana has been in my backlog for quite a bit. I've always seen clips of it, but now that you mention it, now it does seem like those two games would be quite similar. Does this play pretty much like an 8-bit Secret of Mana, kind of?
Oh, no, not at all. But, oh, okay.
but yeah, never mind.
It's pretty similar overall. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you go from 16 to 8-bit, it's pretty similar. But you're only one guy.
Oh, that's like a small difference. You're always ever controlling one guy in mana, but you have three people on your team.
You could switch around, yeah.
Yeah. Mana is much easier combat. And it's more strategy in a way. Like you have magic to actually attack the enemy and that kind of stuff. Whereas I think most of the magic in Crystalis is kind of like to heal yourself or to get around or to chat with the elders, that kind of stuff.
No, there's some like lightning bolt spell that you have that hits all the enemies on the screen. I would say on the NES, this is probably the closest you'll get to mana.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it does remind me of Final Fantasy Adventure, which is like the first game in the mana series.
Yeah.
So
that's Mana Zero.
As we all know it.
Mana of the past. So, I don't know. Todd, how far did you get in this one?
Oh, not at all, guys. I couldn't figure out where to go or what to do in this one. And I looked up a guide and I just did not want to spend so much time figuring this stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I watched a video, a video on it.
Well, even beyond the annoying part of not knowing what to do is even if you do know what to do, like I was playing this one this week, I played it for about an hour. And then I looked up like the list of steps I had to take just to get the fire sword. And I was like, oh God, do I really want to do this? like it's like, oh, you gotta go through the forest where the bugs are, which I always hated as a kid. And then like find that town in the center and then do five more steps and then you get the fire sword. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I call it a Zelda clone, it's more like the look of it. Like, it just looks so much like Zelda. You got the towns and the overworld, and you're swinging a sword, you got items, but definitely the structure is a little different just because it is so, I don't want to say confusing, but just it doesn't help you in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they try to make it more story quest driven in this one, whereas Zelda is more like, okay, you're dropped down in the overworld. You have to go to the first dungeon because that's the only one you can get to right now. You can't get to anywhere else like without getting a raft first or whatever.
Yeah,
you get.
Zelda's so almost like it's like self leveling where you can't get to certain places unless you beat this dungeon because you get the item that lets you go to other places.
Mm-hmm. Right, and there's not really a story. And after you start the game, there's not really a story. It's just like, okay, now go beat the boss.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know what other game this one reminded me of that we played for the show? Willow for the NES.
Willow. What? Oh, yeah, that's right. That's an action RPG. Oh, sorry, my misspeak there. I said good. I'd say that is an action RPG for the NES.
That is one. Well, same with Lord of the Rings, right?
But that was on the SNES, as they say.
That was the SNES. Oh, wow. It played like a NES game because it was so bad.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that one was awful.
Steve's favorite game.
Still upset there's no sequel to it.
Yeah.
Too bad that franchise never went anywhere.
But no, like Willow kind of reminded me it has all of the same. It's not as good action as this game, but it has all of the same like weird story problems and like, oh, what do I do next? Problems,
yeah. Ambiguous quests.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it feels like in a way that both of them were either translated poorly or there just wasn't enough added into it. Like enough description and that kind of thing. I don't know. Like this game playing it this week, I was like, ooh, it really shows its age just because I didn't have the patience to deal with it.
Yeah, if I was younger and just had more time and patience, this might have been fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was just fed up with it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the guide, I would have had a lot of a lot of troubles. I told myself I was going to try and stick with this and get as far as I can. I did put about 15 hours into it, but about 10 hours of it was using the guide. I think I got about halfway through because there's...
Wow. Steve,
if you recall, it's like four major villains you got to beat, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just got a little bit past the second one there, and I plan on seeing it through since I got that far, but I'm kind of glad I'm sticking with it because I am digging the story and the characters you meet, and there's some kind of kooky towns and encounters where I'm like, mm-hmm. All right, this is making it worthwhile, and the gameplay is getting a lot more variety with the gameplay and the various attacks you can mm-hmm. do. Did any of you guys happen to make it to that town of the all-woman town of Amazonas?
I certainly did not.
There, you know, I was mentioning that the English earlier, and just the dialogue to everyone you talk to there just cracked me up. Just go away, I hate men, and I don't know. It was
what is Amazonia?
The mysterious town of only women.
Was Gal Gadot there?
Oh, God.
She's an Easter egg unlock.
That's the same as in the American-made... Where's it made in America? I don't know. The American-based Star Tropics.
Mm.
Starring Mikey Jones.
Mikey Jones.
Yeah. You have to go to the Amazon town, but the only way to get in is to cross-dress and become a transvestite. And then they...
Another thing from Breath of the Wild.
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure in Crystallis you have to use a spell to turn yourself into a lady, and then they will talk to you.
Gotta get my hands on that spell.
Yeah, the all-female town is like a weird common trope from video games. There's also one in Dragon Warrior 4.
Hmm.
Where they, I think they only let in like female characters into the town or something like that. Oh yeah, there's plenty of good names in this one. Dragonia's Finest Four. Did you see those, Todd?
Yeah, I don't have it handy, but yeah, they did have some good names.
General Kelbesk, Sabara the Witch, the Swordsman Mado, and Carmine.
Sabaro?
Sabaro.
Mm.
Sabaro. Yeah,
Sabaro was a second one, the one I just finished where I left off my progress in the game. And when you encounter her, she kind of plays a little evil trick on you. She's like disguised as someone else, saying, like, oh, don't. The person is right behind me, rescue me, yada, yada, yada. Don't go in this cave or something. And then you go in the cave and it's a trap and it sends you all the way back to the beginning of the dungeon. And then you're supposed to attack the person disguised as the boss. And then that's her true form. And I don't know. The characters, she was kind of hokey. I did dig the Finest Four, Elite Four, whatever you want to say they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all as mentioned, they are working for Emperor Dragon. Dragon. Not sure why they threw the Y in there, but still.
I do knew.
Oh, and you're assisted by the four sages: Zebu, Tornel, Asina, Kensu. So, good times. How many swords do you have so far, Dale?
I have all four.
Oh wow! And you've only encountered two of the generals so far, or lieutenants, or whatever they are.
This is a long game.
Yep.
Yeah.
For Niz.
Yeah, like I just got the fourth one, not maybe like a couple hours before I left off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I'm looking quick to see what the speed run is. Looks like it's about an hour and 12 minutes, which seems ridiculous to me. That's without the warp glitch. So, like, there is a glitch in the game that lets you, warp around all over the map, that kind of thing.
You get a magic spell, too, which I probably think the game was a little ahead of its time in that instance. That is like the NES version of fast travel. That came in handy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found these boots in the warp boots in a cave.
Yeah.
And I used it accidentally and went back to the starting village. And I was not happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get it as an item first early on with warp boots, but then later you learn it as a spell.
Yeah, and I think the issue with the game is that there is a code that lets you use the warp spell whenever you want, basically. But the problem is if you use it at certain times of the game, you can make it unusable, basically.
Like you're just trapped.
So, yeah. Like, to warp from one place to another while playing, do this. Press A and B on controller 1 while holding A on controller 2.
What?
The hell?
A screen will appear where you can warp to several different places. The problem is you can warp, like, to and from places that you're not supposed to at various points in the game. So, you can basically make the game unwinnable because of this.
Really easy to break.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you get for cheating.
If people were to pick this up and try it again today, I would recommend carry around as many antidotes as you can, because it is very easy to get poisoned. That happened to me constantly.
Yeah, I was poisoned pretty quick. Wasn't great. Oh,
fun times. The other So the other things it mentions is that if someone's blocking your path, you can basically just hold the directional pad and then just keep canceling the message box, and you'll eventually move past them anyway and through blockades, that kind of thing.
That's like real life.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. So
I'll just continuously walk into you.
Keep walking.
Yeah. Can't stop me. Just touching on where this one is now, Crystallis is regarded as a cult classic. It did have a shoddy re-release for the Game Boy Color.
I played a few minutes of that earlier today just to get a feel for it.
You know, the thing is, it plays kind of okay, but it kind of substantially changes.
Hello.
Hey, I think Steve dropped off.
Oh, okay. Steve.
Don't know where you went.
plug your microphone in.
Use your vocal cords.
Yeah, use your mouth to talk.
Bye. Bye.
Oh gosh, I dig that sound effect every time you guys play that. That in the Game Boy one, and the freaking Kirk Cameron.
Oh yeah,
I had established a thriving town.
Yes,
in the Shimto Plains.
Let's just play drops for the rest of the episode. Well, that's all I ever want, anyway. Oh,
hey. Oh.
Steve, you back?
Yeah, how long was I gone for?
Oh,
you're kind of running down the Game Boy Color version there.
And then he just disappeared.
Oh, okay. When I was reviewing the Game Boy Color version?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, let me...
If you want to pick that up.
Yep, in 3, 2... So the... it's regarded as a cult classic now, but Crystallis, it also had a shoddy re-release for the Game Boy Color. And there hasn't really been a proper sequel for it. It's surprisingly cheap still, though, with the loose cart going for about $15. So it's got that going for it, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't know if this was that popular or to have a re-release. I don't know. Like, why would they bother?
I think they thought they had something special on their hands here, and they wanted to get it out to a broader audience.
I was going to say the Game Boy Color at the time was getting like a lot of NES ports. So it was only like not even 10 years old, a little under. So maybe I think everyone was just trying to rehash, get as much out on there, because there was a ton of stuff coming out on Game Boy Color at the time, and it was maybe just enough of a hit, I think, that they thought it could warrant a re-release. But yeah, like I said, I might get around with it a little earlier today, and like Steve said, it's definitely a little shoddy. They even change up the story intro a little bit in the opening. It kind of changes things up a little bit. I forget how, but I was like, wait a second, this isn't how I remember the NES version starting off. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently, according to the old Wikipedias, the nature of the tower's origin and its purpose were fundamentally altered, with the tower now being a weapon created by the game's antagonist, and the protagonist has been elevated to the hero of an ancient prophecy destined to save the world.
Well, that also, that ancient prophecy thing was in the manual too.
Yeah. But it's weird. The manual, I think, was created. It sounds like it was created independent of the game in some respects.
Probably. Yeah, it's probably just a translation, or not a translation, but like an actual news story.
Yeah, they probably gave them like the beats of the game, and the manual got approved and created like outside of, you know, not much input from the development team or something like that.
Yeah.
It also notes that there's a completely new soundtrack for the Game Boy Color version, which is bizarre because this game has a pretty nifty little soundtrack.
Mm.
There's also odd translation differences. Dragon is now known as Dragonia, which is next to Stankonia in the game.
It is. And it certainly is.
And there's a new dungeon. The tower at the end is redone. And they re-include some stuff like Dragon's second form serves as the final boss in the remake. So, anyway.
The final boss in the first game is the computer, right? The computer, mm-hmm. Dinah.
Yeah, apparently they rearrange it so that that the Emperor Dragon is the last boss. So, now, Todd, we do this segment every week. I want to know, how many DuckTales for Chrysalis?
Oh, you know what? When I calculate this, I factor in two things, two primary factors. So I don't think you guys have heard this before, but the factors are nostalgia and replayability.
Mm.
I don't have any nostalgia for this game.
Interesting.
Because I never played it before. Replayability.
That's interesting how that works. Okay.
Yeah, replayability. I guess it's got a little bit of replayability just because it is a deep story-driven RPG game, and you want to go through that story, that deep story again. But I don't think that replayability is there as much as Steve likes it if he's played through it multiple times already.
Well, when I was a kid, I did. Yeah. So
that all being said. This one is clocking in at a 0.22.
Oh my god!
Wow. Now, let me tell you what happened. Huel guessed 0.19.
Oh, man.
Dale guessed 0.24.
Oh, so, Dale had it. Oh, nice.
So, if we're...
Close.
If we're going... By closest to the pin, then Dale wins. But if we're going Price is Right rules, then yes. Huel wins.
We never defined, but I never was a big fan of the Price is Right rules. If you're closest, you're closest. That's how I always looked at it. What does going yes. over mean? It's pointless.
Yes.
It's pedantic.
Yes. Oh, shallow and
shallow,
pedantic.
Both shallow and pedantic. But yeah, wow. Dale wow. getting a secret guess in there.
Secret. I anticipate the DuckTales score each and every week.
It's one. It's my favorite thing that I started doing 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. I jotted down on my notes, my little .txt notepad file. I'm like, gotta guess my score that the DuckTales score will be.
At least someone's keeping track. Because we all know who isn't.
Well, speaking of one of our other regular features here, Huel, how's the manual?
It's okay. It's very wordy, which right off the bat, I'm not a fan of. it could use more drawing. Yeah.
How many pages of story does it have up front?
Like I said, it is three manual pages of story.
That's a lot for a NES.
It's a lot for NES. Let's see. I mean, it lists like every item and every like location and like, but it's all in just like a big list form. It's not very fun. It's just information. But there is a few drawings of the items and like the swords. Like you get to see the sword of water squirting out water there, and so it's pretty fun. So all in all, it's just a 2.5 out of 5 Mario 2s.
Yeah.
It's right down the middle. Yeah. It needs some pizzazz. Maybe not some kid Drax sass. Maybe not some kid Drax sass, but just something. It's all very just blah.
It needed that Zelda map.
Yeah. The game needed a map. No, not to mention the manual.
You know, I looked this up briefly. I couldn't find a satisfactory answer. I think this may have come with more than just the manual. But I can't remember if it was like a proper map or just like a map of a couple of the areas or if I'm confusing it in my head completely with Nintendo Power, because back in the day, Nintendo Power would just print like full maps for games. So
yeah, games that didn't even like use a map. It would just like show the layout of all the screens.
Like, yeah. It was
combined together like Metroid and stuff.
Yeah, it was glorious until the internet came along and then just gave it to us for free. So
yeah,
kind of.
And print journalism went down the toilet.
Dale, you may have muted yourself by accident. I'm just making sure you're not saying stuff.
Oh, sorry. I was posting that link to you guys for that Chrysalis podcast I mentioned earlier.
Oh, hot Chrysalis pod.
Yes. For the tabletop RPG thing.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
What did you guys think of this game being made by SNK? I was going to mention that earlier. I forgot. Because this seemed like an out of the ordinary type release from them going into this. And they really haven't made at least off the top of my head, an RPG since. Because I think it was, a year after this came out, they kind of went with the Neo Geo platform and they just became like the company that made all like the arcade heavy action games like Metal Slug or all their many fighting games.
Lots of fighting games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't too familiar with them or what other kind of games they made.
I forgot about this until I noticed a note for the remake which was released in 2000. It was like, oh yeah, by the way, they did that because they were having financial problems because the Neo Geo Pocket wasn't selling well. And I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing. They did do the Neo Geo, didn't they? So those games are all like, you know, those are some good arcade games. Who hasn't played some Metal Slug from time to time? One of the quintessential series we have not touched in the slightest.
Yeah, one of the greatest arcade series of all time. Mm-hmm. We also have Magical Drop, which is a nice puzzle game in the arcade for the Neo Geo. But I was looking at the list of games, and NES and before is kind of just random stuff. They have Ikari Warriors, Fighting Golf. Oh, they made Fighting Golf. Baseball Stars. All over the place. But they Super Nintendo and onwards, it's all fighting games. Got your King of Fighters, Fatal Furies, your Art of Fightings, your Samurai Showdowns,
and your
World Heroes, and my favorite, my Neo Geo favorite, Waku Waku 7.
Of course.
Oh, man. I loved Ikari Warriors back in the day. I played that way too much. That game was evil and awesome at the same time. Levels that never ended.
See, I remember various people stumping for stuff like King of Fighters, Samurai Showdown, and Fatal Fury. But like I played them at various points and just was never into them. They always felt like bad Street Fighter to me.
But they're more technical than Street Fighter.
I don't want technical. I just want to throw fireballs. I'll do hurricane kicks. I don't know. I don't have much else to say about this one, but Todd, I understand that you had one more regular feature that you wanted to do.
Sure. Yeah, I guess we all agree that this is, you know, it's an action RPG on the NES. It is.
That is something we can agree.
We can agree on that. But I do have two reasons why Christ Allies on the NES is the most best game of all time. And the first one is titled Crystalis for the Nintendo by an anonymous reviewer on Amazon, written May 17th, 2014. I had this when I first got my Nintendo. Some old lady gave it to me and Mario games. Dad got me this Crystalis game. It is Frist, Dungeon, and Dragons game type, if you will. It is so fun to play. Get a retro Nintendo and enjoy it. I have will years to come. It was one of my LOL favorite games to play. You are a great warrior. And have to journey to save mankind from mundane creatures. You get cool weapons and modes of transpiration. You ride a dolphin and can teleport.
Whoa.
I don't want to spoil it. 5 stars.
Oh my God.
That's so detailed. And I don't see how anyone can't play it after hearing that.
Best game ever.
A dolphin.
What a review.
You gotta fight those untaint creatures.
I love the dolphin rides in the game.
Yeah.
Well, Todd, did you have anything else?
Yeah, there's one more.
Oh, there's one more.
Oh, another reason. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the second reason why this is the most best game of all time. And it's titled The Review of Crystalis by D-Rex of Michigan. And it's written by an anonymous reviewer, but their name is in the title, on January 9th, 2000. So this is an old one. This game is so cool, it makes me chicken slapping happy. You start out with only a sword, and the beginning is fairly easy. I think that all role players should at least try the game, because you're sure to love it. 5 stars.
Oh.
I'd hate to be a chicken.
Chicken slapping goodness.
For many reasons.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, on that note, Huel, was there anything else you wanted to say about this one?
Oh, boy. Not really. I think we pretty much covered it.
Got it all? Covered it?
Got it all out.
It's all out of my system.
All right.
Squirted it all out of there.
All into the microphone. Dale,
how about you?
I'm just glad I finally got around to seeing what this game was all about, and glad I made as much progress as I did, and I think I'm going to power through it and get to it to the bitter end, for better or worse. And again, if people have a time, maybe check out that long podcast series from Game Cola, making the game. If people don't want to go through all the troubles that we did with the gameplay, their D&D style podcast of Crystalis was mighty entertaining.
Nice.
Huh. Nice. Well, let's move right along then to the email portion of the show.
I'm
Todd, did you have any emails this week?
I do have an email. Let me paste something in here for you guys real quick. So you can look along.
Oh god.
The email, you know, it's kind of a mix of an ask and video game questions. It came in as an ask.
Okay.
But I'm going to toss it in here in the email, the game email portion of the show, just because there's some game questions in there. So the email says, "Dear YPB, please describe and explain this comic strip for me. Sincerely yours, Zechariah Wolfson." And then there's a PS, "What is a good game for the olds?" And then PPS, "Did you young whippersnappers know that in October of 1958, physicist William Higginbottom created what is thought to be the first video game? It was a very simple tennis game similar to the classic 1970s video game Pong, and it was quite a hit at a Brookhaven National Laboratory open house."
Okay.
So let's take it piece by piece. First of all, this comic.
Yeah.
This comic strip.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. So you have two old gentlemen sitting in a room. A ghost is flying down the stairs, mm-hmm. the staircase. Mm-hmm. They're looking at it. Mm-hmm. And then one says, "Good heavens, is it midnight already?" Mm-hmm. So who wants to explain that one?
Well, it's the witching hour. So,
well, that's what it seems like. Seems like on the surface.
I mean, I don't know why it's funny, but
this is clearly a commentary on the end of the patriarchy. These are two old white men, and the time of midnight represents the end of their time. And this shrieking,
screaming female,
this woman
coming down the stairs, this banshee
bursting in. She won't be silenced anymore.
This devil woman.
Yeah, she will not be silenced anymore. She's here to put an end to their rule. So it is midnight. It is midnight for the patriarchy.
You know, Hugh, I hate to quibble with your interpretation, but this comic is from 1954.
Exactly. And the patriarchy's over. So
just 64 short years later.
The comic was right.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, isn't Oprah the most rich woman in the world?
The most rich person in history.
The most rich person, yeah, in history.
Yeah.
And so, the smartest.
Mission accomplished.
Got him.
Got them all.
All right, second part is, what is a good game for the old?
Oh, yeah. Tiddlywinks?
Yeah, I was going to say Candy Crush. My parents can crush a candy or two.
Yeah, my mom loves anything on any Flash game, any terrible Flash game that you can find on the computer.
Like Stick Fight?
Not quite Stick Fight. Well, it's like, like matching stuff or cards, kind of solitaire.
My mom's into any cheap ripoff of like an established board game. Like Words with Friends or Ruzzle,
Scrabble,
which is Ruzzle is Boggle, but online kind of. So anything like that.
Yeah, my dad's big into Words with Friends. I played a lot of games with my dad growing up, but the one that I could tell he got really into, there's two of them on NES. It was Gauntlet 2, and then me and siblings and my dad, we had that 4-player adapter, so we try and we thought there was an ending to that game. Back then, we didn't know the game just randomly respawned levels after level 4, and we got well past level 100, and we're like, nope, we can't beat this game. I just turned it off, but it was still a lot of fun. Yeah. And or if there is an end of the game, if it's really like level 200 or 300 and some, I have no idea. But I think we got up to level like, I don't know, it was we got past level 100 because we thought, oh, the game has to end at level 100. And we're like, oh, no, it's not.
Wow.
And we're probably around level 110, 112 or so. It was so long ago where we're like, yeah, let's just say we beat the game.
That's lying.
But the game, I saw my dad always got into the zone when playing, and you couldn't even talk to him, was new Tetris on N64. He was
nice.
I mean, that game had four players also, so it was great versus multiplayer too, but for single player it was great too. And the game had local leaderboards on the cartridge, so you know, it was like top 10 scores across all the game mode. And my dad got really good at the game. I remember one time I happened to get a really good score, and I got like number 6 on our game's local leaderboard. I guess that infuriated my dad a lot, so he kept playing till my name got off the top 10 leaderboard altogether. So, yeah. Can't go wrong with a classic like Tetris.
Whenever your son gets a higher score than you at Tetris, that means you're dying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your life's over.
Also, Tengen Tetris on original Nintendo was great too. That had an awesome co-op mode where you could play together on the same drop box, a wider mm-hmm. one than normal. And yeah, my dad and I, we played a lot of that on old school Nintendo too.
Yeah, widely considered to be the best version of Tetris.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Todd, did we answer all that?
There's one more about Mr. Higginbottom creating the first video game in October of 1958. And the ask was, did us young whippersnappers know about this one? And I did. He. This is the guy that created Tennis for Two on his oscilloscope and widely considered to be the first video game, the first game on video, as they say.
That old canard. So.
Yeah.
Well, Huel, did you receive any mails this week?
It's a good thing you asked, because I did get one. They write, Dear YPB, I'm so glad you covered Golden Axe last week. That was one of my favorite games growing up, even though Axe Battler didn't use an axe. My favorite feature was smacking around those little elves for items. It was so satisfying hearing their little screams. It made me wonder what kinds of things other people were carrying around that I could get just by hitting them. Things didn't go so well, but I at least accomplished my goals. What's the best way to obtain items in a video game? And it's not signed with a name, it just came from the Maryland Correctional Facility.
Best way to obtain items in a video game.
Yeah, lots of different ways.
Well, I'm playing through Persona 5 right now, and I kind of like that you just break stuff. Like,
yeah,
like you can just break a vase to get the gold inside of it. So
that's Zelda style. More Zelda talk.
Yeah. I did like that part of Zelda, although it was confusing that like you would find rupees under shrubs and stuff like that. Like bombs as well.
Of course.
Like that seems dangerous, but still.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, and also in Zelda, another satisfying part of item getting is opening a chest and have that little ditty, that jingle play while you hold the item over your head.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I agree with pressing A on everything in the old school games. I guess one example that came to mind for me when you mentioned that question was in Oblivion on 360. It became hard. It was kind of going through items like really crazy, and eventually, you know, scouring the interwebs at the time, a great way to get more items that you're in desperate need of was the old dupe glitch. I don't know if you guys ever used that in Oblivion way back when.
I never have a need to dupe.
Yeah, to get through some of those dungeons, like my character was a fighter, so didn't really have much magic, and you only had so many health potions, and then found this way. If you go through the menus just right, and you drop a weapon or something a certain way while highlighting an item, it'd duplicate like X amount of items, and yeah, if it wasn't for that, I would have never made it through that game.
This is the old LD Scrolls game, right?
Yeah, not Morrowind, but Oblivion on
Elder Scrolls 4.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, before the
before all the cool kids started playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that
Elder Scrolls 4 was when it transitioned to being into a cool kid game.
Yeah, big time. I liked Morrowind too, but I could that one was a little bit more old school, and I think Oblivion was the one that kind of modernized it a little bit to where it got like just making your way across the everywhere. Well,
the big thing about Oblivion is that it added quest markers and things like that. And in Morrowind, you had to actually like read what people were saying and write down in a notebook. The guy would say, "Hey, go down the western road past three mountains, and then you'll find the dungeon." And you had to actually pay
thank
attention.
You.
Yeah, that was those quest markers, and then it added far more fast travel options, and way better.
Speaking of, when am I getting Skyrim 2? Or
don't you mean Skyrim 6?
Whatever.
No, Skyrim 2. Elder Scrolls 6.
Skyrim 2. Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, some people are partial to grabbing scrolls online. But
I'm fine just grabbing them scrolls online, stealing them scrolls out of other people's hands on online.
I want a single player, deeply story driven scroll experience.
Scrolls on scrolls. Well, for that, you could just play Yo Noid.
I played that. I mean, we played that. Like, I need to know what's next.
Yo Noid 2.
They're working on six, Yo Noid 2.
They're working on a spin-off for the Switch, Adoring Fans' Greatest Adventures. Recapture all those amazing deaths that you sent them on time and time again.
Ooh. But so for the email, the thing that came to mind was my favorite in-game merchant, that weirdo from Resident Evil 4.
Oh yeah.
There's just a dude that shows up randomly, like while you're adventuring. He's just this guy in like a robe, and he opens up his robe and shows you all his goods.
You know, as we talked about in our Resident Evil 2 episode, I never played past number 2, so I haven't idea what you're talking about. But I gotta look this guy up.
Resident Evil 4 merchant is one of the best merchants, possibly the best merchant of all time.
Very quotable.
Yeah, he's great. Because he's like, it's a very like serious and gory game, and he's just slightly out of place, and it just makes it like that much better. But not like so out of place where it's like jarring. There's just like something about him that just doesn't quite fit with the rest of the game. And I don't know. He's great though.
Well, for my answer, I'll just go keep it simple and sweet. I just love those spinning ammo boxes in Quake. I love picking up some shotgun shells and hearing the click, the clank as you pick them up.
Clickety clank. That's good. Yeah. Ooh.
Well, Dale, did you receive any mails this week? Even though we did not publicize your appearance.
It was weird. Like, I don't even know if I want to read it, but like, I guess kept getting this one short and simple spam in my email all the time. So I think this guy was really soliciting for responses. And, but it said was, "Hey Dale, here you're going on YPB this week. Please ask everyone if they're going to watch the XFL next year. If so, I will send you bunch of unsealed boxes of New York, New Jersey Hitmen jerseys coming your way. Please, please watch the XFL again. And also, will you be watching WrestleMania this year? Sincerely, Vince McMahon."
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
I got like 8 emails from him over the last
multiple copies. I am oddly excited about the XFL in a pure car crash way. Just like, what are they going to do with this thing? Is it going to happen? Well, it is going to happen, but like, how is this going to be executed? I'm very excited
Yeah, me too. Just to see how it's going to unfold, and why is he doing this? Why? You see the press conference and just how it all unfolds. Yeah.
It's like a green screen, and like it's so weird.
Is that the reaction he was going for? Is people saying, "Why is he doing this?"
God damn it! This is gonna work.
I need football. People are tired. Pussy NFL players.
Oh man.
They're gonna stand for the end.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. If he picked a time to do it, this is probably the right time to do it with all the controversies and all with the displeasure with the NFL over the last couple of years. But it's still probably going to be a colossal failure.
That's definitely a factor, but it's also not starting till like the end of like mid 2019.
Still ways off.
We'll see if the momentum can carry over.
It's weird to me that everyone just had a knee jerk reaction. They were like, "Oh yeah, it's people are upset with these players kneeling and stuff." College football ratings went down too, though. Like,
yeah, exactly. All TV did.
Yeah,
all TV ratings are down, like across the board.
Yeah, so I don't know. I do think football is a little less popular than it was, but I think it's more like the concussion stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, big time.
I think there's room for a new league.
Yeah, to answer Vince's question, if the games are fun, I'll watch them. If they're on like TV and decent, then sure. I mean, yeah,
I'll watch at least the first few weeks.
Yeah, the original XFL was not especially great, and I still watch it anyway just because it was like
pure football spectacle. Like, yeah.
Yeah, what else am I going to watch? Like the Vampire Diaries? Come on.
They better bring back the sprint for the coin toss. That, oh man, so absurd. had injury the first time they did it, and oh boy.
They should, you know what they really need to bring back is they should bring back Slam Ball as one of our former writers would say.
Yes.
Well, I received no emails. So let's move along to the new news section. where I have two items. First, Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, gets a release date, which is November 15th, 2019.
Ooh, is this going to be better or worse than the Mario movie?
Well, it has to be better by default, in a way. Because the Mario,
you know, they're making that. I'm not talking about the 1992.
The new Mario movie,
John Leguizamo vehicle. I'm talking about the new, the new
Mario.
talking about the new one that DreamWorks is making. They're making
they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one will be directed by Jeff Fowler, whoever. I don't know who that is, but it is being executive produced by Tim Miller, who is the director of Deadpool. So, you know, I have a feeling that Sonic is going to have some attitude.
He's going to be sassy. He's going to be smart and sassy.
Yep.
As long as he's still munching on chili dogs.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, there's two items. I'm reading this from comicbook.com has a press release on this. Two things to worry about is, one, it is a mixture of live action and CGI, apparently. And two, no actors now anywhere in this, which seems odd for a movie that's going to come out in a year and a half.
Oh, no actors booked on it. I thought you were saying there's going to be no actors in the movie.
It's just silence.
It's a silent film. It's Steamboat Sonic. What is that?
Okay.
Is that from the old Sonic cartoon?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Scratch and Ground are laughing.
Oh, I remember. That show was bizarre. All right, and one there's one other update on Frequent Bugaboo and Huel's dream sequel, Shaq Fu 2.
Yes.
So now they are saying it's going to come out this spring.
That's like a month away.
Yeah, that's almost spring.
And also,
it's almost spring right now.
And they've also claimed that we wrote the game over 3 years ago and had not idea what history had in store for the world at that time. As a result, we had to change certain narratives because things got a little Notre Dame as the months unfolded. Some major plot changes meant we had to rework certain sections of the game that had a huge impact on the story overall.
Did they have, was school shootings a major plot point in this game or what?
Oh, no.
They're the ones writing the story. Like, how could there be plot twists that they weren't expecting?
You know, I don't know. It's just mind-boggling. Like how...
Major plots.
Yeah. I don't know. This mentioned spring, but they'll also let the... At the end of this update, it says you can expect a new trailer and release date any day now.
Time next week, we'll have all watched the trailer, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
The brand new one.
Yeah.
Spring's only a month away.
Yeah. I'm sure we won't get no updates for 6 months like they've done in the past.
Don't forget, if you order the Switch version, you get Shaq Fu for free whenever that eventually releases. The Switch version of NBA Playgrounds.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, is that game out Shaq either? Fu.
Yep, Playgrounds came out, yeah. But the Switch version didn't have the online or a severely hacked together version of the online. And like the online for the Switch version of NBA Playgrounds finally got up and running just pretty recently, like a month or two ago. And they said, as a make good, we'll give you a free copy of Shaq Fu whenever that releases. And the developers were asked about this just a month or two back. And they said, yep, it's still coming. You'll still get it.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, it's 2018. Why would you want a game with online multiplayer anyway? Todd, did you receive any asks this week or was that kind of in the email portion as you mentioned?
Yeah, you know what? We did answer an ask and we are running long this week. I don't want to go too long. So right, let's save this one until next week.
Let's move right along to the big finish then. Huel, was there anything else you wanted to add this week?
Well, just remember that we are in an era in which science and technology were shunned, for they had proven to be mankind's downfall. And the ancient arts of sorcery and magic were revived.
Deep.
It's a lot to think about.
Todd, anything else you wanted to add this week?
Yeah, if you'll pardon me, gents, I need to go head to the pharmacy to get something for my sword of fire I got going on here.
Okay. Good luck with it.
We've all been there. Dale, thanks so much for guesting on this week's show. Anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, no, yeah. Thanks for having me on again, guys. It's always a ton of fun talking retro gaming goodness with you guys. And I guess I'll give a quick, cheap plug to my blog. I always do. People like reading about random old movies. I do a little movie blog and TV blog at daleisgreat.blogspot.com. I actually just posted an entry earlier today for Ken Burns's take on the Vietnam War. So,
whoa,
there you go.
Oh, nice.
More deep and story driven content.
Yeah, it's definitely a whole different take than Chrysalis. Yes.
Yeah. Some awesome. Some light content for you to get into.
Yes.
Thanks for coming back.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Speaking of deep story driven media.
Oh yeah.
Here's a snifferoo from next week's movie.
Two tickets to California, please.
That's $226.
Well, we only have $27.30. What does that get us?
Nowhere.
Corey's taking his brother Jimmy on a ride. These two boys already traveled more than 80 miles across the state.
We've hired someone to find him.
What's his problem?
He's just giant.
But Jimmy's got a secret.
You got 50,000 on Double Dragon?
That could make this the ride of their lives.
Look at him. He's a wizard.
He's headed for the video championship.
This guy?
What is that?
Power glove.
Yeah, well, just keep your power gloves up for all right.
With a touch of romance.
I am not kissing a boy.
And a ton of trouble.
Got you.
We're too late.
Put me down!
Sorry about that.
You maniac!
They'll get there any way they can.
Emmy! Here we come!
It's Jimmy!
Come here!
Stop.
Stop them!
Now, what do you think you're doing to him?
All his life, you've been telling him to do what you want him to do. How about once you ask him what he wants to do, huh?
Now,
Video Armageddon.
It's going to take a lot of guts.
You can do it!
A little magic.
You're the best!
And the wizard, Fred Savage. The Wizard.